several of Dave's classes as a result. But I've been enjoying the classes that I've been able to be here during his class, and my own personal study of Joshua, and not just the book of Joshua, but the life of Joshua, the man who Joshua was. Talk about great heroes. You would be hard-pressed to find a better hero, a biblical hero, than Joshua as a man. Now, of course, you find the Son of God. But I classify him as above a hero because he is the very Son of God. But when you look at heroes, think of people today and what they think of when they think of heroes. And the way that I, by the way, little aside note, I don't want this to be a monologue. I can do a monologue if you want me to. But I don't like to hear my voice as much as I like to hear yours. So I would very much like to hear input from all of you. And to try to keep it sane, I'll just ask you to raise your hand so that we're not talking all over each other. But when you think of heroes today, please share with me what people commonly think of as heroes. Who do you think of as a hero? Extra biblical. Mothers. Wow. Enough said. We're done here. Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Firemen. Sometimes we think of policemen. How about members of the military? Many people think of them as heroes. And maybe in our audience, it's not going to be as much as it is in other places, but does it ever happen that people think of certain actors or actresses or sports figures as heroes? When I was growing up, I grew up in a lot of different places, but one of the places that I grew up in was Southern California. And while I was there, we weren't far from Angel Stadium, where the Angels played, if you will, and Dodger Stadium. And used to love to go to the baseball games. And as a little kid, I had heroes. Nolan Ryan was one of them. He was pitching for the Angels when I lived there. Several other people, Jim Fregosi, a baseball player. He was very, very good at his role as a baseball player. He was one of my heroes. But I want you to think in terms of heroes in a different light. As we look at who Joshua is, what Joshua accomplished, and how the Lord used Joshua to accomplish his will, it kind of elevates our concept of hero. At least it does to me. When I think of a hero, and I think of a sporting figure or an actor or an actress or whatever, whatever it is that you kind of look up to someone as a hero, it pales in comparison by what great men of God and great women of God have done to serve God. And I hope, and I'm thinking that I'm speaking to the choir, but could you necessarily say that many of your neighbors feel the same way? I saw some heads going this way. Many of our neighbors, they don't think. In fact, I would ask you this. Why don't they think of biblical heroes? Why don't they normally think of, in their minds, when you think of a hero, a true hero, why don't they think of biblical characters? Lack of knowledge. They don't know. Many of them don't care to know. It's getting to the point in our society. When you grew up, where you grew up, and this is very important to our study this morning, so I'm belaboring the point and expanding on this a little bit because it's very important that we understand what has happened in about the last 40, 50 years in our society. Why is it that, I mean, when I was a little kid, I remember biblical heroes, even though I didn't grow up in the church. I grew up in a different faith, but I remember biblical heroes. It was a part of my vocabulary growing up. But could you say the same thing today about, and even maybe a few years ago, about our children and the friends that they grew up with and the people that are growing up today? Do they even think of biblical heroes? I would venture to say that probably not. Majority of the kids today, and even, you know, of 10 years ago, are growing up thinking about what? What are they thinking about? I didn't hear the comment. Text messaging. DS? So basically, all they think about is constantly being entertained. It seems as if everything we want is contained in a very short statement or a headline, right? If you read the headline, well, now you know the whole story. Absolutely. Thank you. Did you have a comment? So that this comment was about television and programming and that kind of content. And so it seems as if there's been a big change. When I was growing up, I only watched a few hours of television a week. I was outside playing. I was playing with friends. We were playing at the sandlot, playing baseball, playing kickball, playing dodgeball. I can't play dodgeball anymore either, I don't think. Riding bikes, exploring the area. That's where I seemed to spend most of my time when I was growing up. And it wasn't until later years, when I became much more lazy than I should be, that I started watching more television. What does that say to us about our lifestyles in our society? Not only has it become sedentary, but it's become what? Self-absorbed. Wouldn't you describe us as self-absorbed people, you know, as a society? These are generalistic statements. We are very self-absorbed, very much aware of what it is that we like and what it is that we want to do and what it is that we enjoy, how we spend our recreation or our rest time. And I saw a hand go up back here somewhere. Yes. What's that? Yeah. And I must admit that in our work, where I work, if email was to go down, we'd be in serious trouble. We would. People very seldom pick up the phone and call each other anymore. It's a quick little email or a quick little instant messenger. Anybody here do instant messaging? You know, a quick little instant message. And it usually doesn't go into a lot of substance because most of us don't like to sit and write for very long, do we? Not only do we not like to read for very long, but most of us don't like to write for very long. Now, I have said all this Because as we examine who Joshua is, and I'm sure that Dave had done some of this in leading into this class, but unfortunately I wasn't here, and I thought it might be a good kind of quick review to look at who was this person, this man, Joshua. And so we'll take a quick look and then look at some lessons that we can learn from Joshua that perhaps might help us in our current circumstances, where we find ourselves today in our society. How can we, as children of God, influence those who are around us towards God, guide them towards God? And so I'm hoping that, again, I didn't want this to start off as such a downer, but when you look at our society, if that's all we focus on is all the issues that our society has, it can seem to be a downer. But there are some good things that can be done as children of God to influence people for good. Yes? You're stealing our thunder here. You zipped to the very end of the class. Who was it that said it? Was it Aristotle or Socrates? That our society is falling apart all around us. You know, people are doing all kinds of wickedness and evil. And this was, you know, more than a couple of thousand years ago, a long time ago. You know, just think about the fact that the world before the flood was completely self-absorbed, with the exception of Noah's family. So is everything that was old new again? Or is it the nature of a man, mankind, let me put it that way, humankind, to slip into mediocrity and to slip into laziness and to slip into bad habits and to slide into not worshiping God? As an example, if you haven't done so lately, read Judges chapter 2 as to what happened to the generation that followed Joshua's generation. And we may touch on that in class if we can get to it. But thank you very much. That was we've gone to the end, and let's circle back and see if we can't put some meat in there in between. In Numbers chapter 13, verse 8, we find that Joshua was of the tribe of Ephraim, and he was the son of Nun. There's a joke in there somewhere. I think I heard it once, but I'm not going to pass it on to you guys at this point. In Genesis 41:50, the scripture tells us that to Joseph were born two sons before the years of famine came, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. So going all the way back to when Joseph was in Egypt and Israel was becoming a nation, growing up, if you will, in Egypt, we find that there's a link between what Joshua is going to be doing and what Joseph did. Because what did Joseph do? How did God use Joseph to save Israel and to help Israel grow? I want you to think about that. Those of you who have been recently reading through the Bible, you know, through the daily Bible study or you know, through standard just reading of the Bible and study. How did God use Joseph to save Israel and for that nation to grow? Very good. So I can repeat in case you didn't hear what she said. God used Joseph to save Israel by having his brothers send him down there with evil intent. But Joseph said what when they finally came down and, you know, they had that big meeting? What did Joseph say? For good. And then what happened, you know, just quickly on the life of Joseph, what did Joseph do that saved Egypt and saved Israel? God gave him some visions, right? Gave him some dreams, and or gave Pharaoh some dreams, and he gave the interpretation, and he was able to prepare for a famine, a long-term famine. And therefore, Egypt became very wealthy. The Israelites who were living in Egypt at the time, in the best of the land back then, which was called Goshen, thrived during that time. And eventually, of course, we know the story that another Pharaoh came into power that didn't know anything about Joseph or any of these other things. And that might just mean that he didn't care about all those things. He just cared about his own power as Pharaoh. And so they lived under slavery, didn't they? For several hundred years, they lived under slavery. And so God sent Moses to bring the Israelites out of Egypt and to teach them his word, to teach him his will. So think, you know, connect these dots here. Here is the beginning of the Israelite nation in Canaan. They go down through, God uses Joseph as the vehicle to save the Israelite nation and to incubate the Israelite nation so that the nation grows within Egypt and becomes a great nation, a great number of people. And then God sends Moses, because now they're being tormented and afflicted. You know, the Egyptians were afraid of the Israelites. Did you know that? They were afraid that they would outgrow them and reproduce them and then take over their country. So they treated them very harshly after a while. But God heard their cries, and God delivered them through Moses. And then God gave them their law, the law that they were to live under. But now look who's going to take them back to Canaan. A son of Joseph, right? A son of a son of a son of a son. But basically, we see it come full circle. God used Joseph as a vehicle to save Israel. And then God used Joshua as a vehicle to bring them back to Canaan and to provide them the country which God promised to Abraham when he was walking across Canaan. Isn't that an amazing, you know, talk about an amazing story. And the way that God intervened, not only through providence, but in some cases through some kinds of miracles that were involved. And you think about what God did to bring about this time when Joshua was leading Israel into Canaan and throughout Canaan. And to me, I'm amazed when I think of the implications of that. So he was one of Moses' personal attendants, Numbers 11:28, a specially chosen one, and he became his closest servant. Now, in the ASV, the scripture reads, "And Joshua, the son of Nun, the minister of Moses, one of his chosen men, answered and said, 'My Lord Moses, forbid them.'" The King James says, "And Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of Moses, one of his young men, answered and said, 'My Lord Moses, forbid them.'" And the NK, New King James Version says, "So Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, one of his choice men, answered and said, 'Moses, my Lord, forbid them.'" And that word, I can't pronounce it, Bekorim, means literally young man. Literally and figuratively, young man. So here we have Joshua at the feet of Moses as a young man learning from the great lawgiver. Do you think that that could have been by accident? When you think of the implications of that to us today, if anyone wants to become a person of leadership, a person who wants to learn good things and the proper types of behavior, and you know, we use the term what? A role model. Find a role model, find a mentor. That's what we use at work. You know, find a mentor, work with that person to develop your career. But how often do we think about that in the church? To find a role model, to find a mentor, to find someone that can help us grow in Christ and grow closer to God, grow more mature in the faith, grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So many times we don't link ourselves to a mentor, to a role model, to someone that can help us develop and to be a better Christian. A lot of times we do that on our own, or we try to do that on our own. Can any of you think of some role models that you might have, whether it's here in this congregation, and don't worry about embarrassing anyone, that you look to as someone that can help you build your faith, that can help you build your relationship with God, whether it's here or somewhere else? Has anyone ever had a role model? Your grandmother? That's sweet. It's always nice when a member of the family can be someone that can help you in that regard. Say that again. Goldie Denson. What did Goldie do? I don't guess I... Oh, okay. Outstanding. One of mine, yes, please. On how to repair a what? Okay, all right. I'm sorry, I just didn't hear you clearly. So, That's a wonderful story. You know, I think back to when I became a Christian early on, and some of my role models, one of them became the man that married Sherry and I. He performed the ceremony. And his name's Bob Childress, and he had served as an elder at the Baker Heights Church of Christ in Abilene, Texas for many, many years. And in fact, if I recall correctly, Sherry, correct me if I'm wrong, Bob and several others were sent from the university church to establish a congregation on the west side of town near the Air Force Base, Dyess, which was my first assignment out of technical school. And so that congregation was there as a result of him and several other men going out there. And it was as a result of that that I was able to thrive and grow as a Christian. And I'll always remember those times as extremely important to me because of what I came out of. And that's how I met Sherry, because that congregation was there nearby. Now, why am I sharing all this? I'm sharing this because Joshua, in his youth, was at the feet of a great mentor, of someone that could guide him, of someone that could help him, and someone that would help him be successful. How does this work with respect to his leadership ability? Think about the kind of leader that Joshua would become. He was, at this point, a young man and had been serving Moses. And he was to become a great military and spiritual leader for the nation of Israel, many, many years removed from this particular point in time where he's with Moses. We understand many times as we grow older how important it is to be prepared, you know, to study, to learn, whatever it is, whether it's a trade, whether you're going into the professional world, you want to go into education or others. We understand that there's a period of preparedness that all of us need to go through. Quite often when we're young, how much do we understand that? I look back on those days of my life, and if I could see a year down the road, I was doing great. I couldn't see that far down the road. So think today with our children, with our grandchildren, how we might be able to help them in terms of preparing for serving God. Our daughter, our oldest daughter, Rebecca, became the wife of a gospel preacher. And I guess, you know, in spite of my best efforts, the Lord used us to raise the wife of a gospel preacher. And Rebecca is a wonderful young lady, a wonderful mom, a wonderful daughter. And I really appreciate what she does and what she's done in marrying a gospel preacher and in raising her children in that light. And Paul and Rebecca are raising Hayden. He's already imitating preaching. He gets up there and he's only a toddler. And he's already up there starting to imitate the preaching. It's lovely to see. I share that with you because it was early on in Exodus 17:9 when Moses said to Joshua, "Choose us some men, go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand." So even though Joshua was one of his young men, look who Moses picked to lead that battle and to gather, you know, to fight against Amalek. And it was Joshua. And then look at the result as a result of after the battle and what had happened. And I see a lot of grooming of Joshua going on here. Exodus 17:14. "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Write this for a memorial in the book and recount it in the hearing of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven.'" And that was after the battle, after they had defeated Amalek. And he wanted to make sure that Joshua knew what God had instructed Moses to write in the book. Do you think that there might have been a reason behind that? Okay, I guess that was a rhetorical question. The memorial served as a prophetic statement regarding the ultimate demise of Amalek. And that's not going to occur for several hundred years. Because we can read in 1 Samuel 15 that Saul, you know, went and fought against Amalek. And David in 2 Samuel 8:11 also dedicated silver and gold that he had from the nations he had subdued. One of those was Amalek. And so from that time on, Amalek was a suppressed nation. God was making sure that they understood that his promise would be kept true. And it was throughout the entire history of that nation. In 2 Samuel 8:12, that's where the reference is, 2 Samuel 8:12, where he gets the tribute from Amalek. You know, Joshua gains more and more experience throughout the years, way before it ever comes to Jericho. The cultivation, the practice, the growing up of Joshua to be a great military leader and a great spiritual leader has been occurring for decades through the wanderings in the wilderness. I mean, we already know about how Joshua and Caleb were the only two spies that came back and gave the positive report. We can take them. And unfortunately, the rumor mill got going on in Israel, and they listened to the 10 spies who they didn't think it could happen. They didn't trust God. And of course, we know that it was only Joshua and Caleb of that generation that went into Canaan during that conquest. And then there's an amazing scene, and we still have some time. We go till 10:15? Okay, 7 minutes, all right. An amazing scene occurs in Exodus 24:9. Then Moses went up, also Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and they saw the God of Israel. And there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of sapphire stone, and it was like the very heavens in its clarity. The Hebrew word translated means in its purity, in its purity. Continuing the reading, but on the nobles of the children of Israel he did not lay his hand, so they saw God, and they ate and drank. Then the Lord said to Moses, come up to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you tablets of stone and the law and commandments which I have written that you may teach them. So Moses arose with his assistant Joshua, and Moses went up to the mountain of God. And he said to the elders, wait here for us, Moses and Joshua, until we come back to you. Indeed, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man has a difficulty, let him go to them. Could you imagine being in that audience and seeing a manifestation of God of that nature and rebelling against him? It causes me to shudder to think that here they're seeing a manifestation of God. They've seen these miracles. They've seen all of these things. And yet, this generation will not go into Canaan because of rebellion to God. And so it makes me wonder, if people say, if I saw a miracle today, I'd believe. What about all these people here in the thousands and the tens of thousands that saw miracles? And they might have believed that, yeah, he's there, but they didn't take him at his word that he would punish them if they didn't, you know, turn to him if they didn't keep his word. And if you couldn't hear that, he said that Jesus said, you know, basically the same thing. You know, if you're not going to believe me for the miracles that I have performed, you know, in front of you. And so I'm sharing this with you because we look at Joshua, we look at how this applies today to us, and you think about the things that he went through, the preparation that he went through to undergo before God used him as that vehicle to bring Canaan into subjection and a nation for Israel to live in. And I'm hoping that those of you who are young, and that's for you to decide, will take this to heart, the fact that it does take preparation and it does take a good mentor. It does take good leadership. It does take someone that you can align yourself with that will help you grow in the nurture and in the admonition of the Lord, and to grow in the faith, to grow in grace. You know, Joshua was, there's many implications there, and I'm not going to expand on them simply because we're just about out of time. You know, there's some lessons from the life of Joshua that we can all learn, and here's several of them. Do you think when Joshua was with Moses at the mountain, seeing that manifestation of God, do you think that he ever thought he would become the military and spiritual leader of Israel many, 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 many years down the road to lead them into Canaan? Could that really have been in his mind? I mean, it's possible he might have heard some things, right? But to really know, you know, hey, the Lord's preparing me now for this great thing that he's going to want me to do in 45 years or so, 40 plus years. Sometimes the preparation that we do today, we don't see how it's going to be used until the moment comes. I've heard this said over and over, and I'm sure several of you have heard the same thing. If you're ready, if you're prepared, when the opportunity presents itself, then you can take advantage of it. But if the opportunity is presented and you're not prepared for it, what can you do? So a leader will one day be replaced. Who's going to replace the leader? Today, elders will pass on for whatever reason, whether it is that they resign from the eldership, whether it is that they pass on to the next life. But someday they'll be replaced. Gospel preachers will be replaced. Where are their replacements going to come from? It's going to take people preparing and who have been preparing to step into those roles when the opportunity is presented. Number two, there should be special training for persons who will one day assume greater leadership and responsibilities. What training did Joshua have? He had a lot of training, a lot of preparation, a lot of practice. He got to practice what he was taught, and he got to see it in practice as well, didn't he? He got to put into practice that which he was learning as he was learning it, which happens to be one of our major tenets as in instructional theory and curriculum design and all that, and that is get adult learners especially doing these things quickly. Otherwise, you lose them. You lose them as students. You know, God promised that he would be with Joshua in the Bible. In Joshua chapter 1, verses 5 through 9, the entire text there is about God encouraging Joshua to be strong. You know, imagine you were suddenly thrust into the leadership of this congregation. Here you are. You are now a leader. And you didn't have the preparation. Or even if you thought you had preparation, you didn't really know what you were getting into. Would you approach that with some trepidation? Perhaps with a little fear? A little concern? It's not an easy role to step into the role of an elder or even a deacon or a gospel preacher. It does take some preparation and some practice. A leader's reputation must be guarded. Look at Joshua chapter 6, verse 27, and I think you brought this out, that the Lord was with Joshua and his fame spread throughout all the country. All those people knew who Joshua was. His reputation preceded him, and it could have been an instant message. The oracle could have come in by and said something, and, you know, Joshua and the Israelites are coming. What are we going to do? So they knew. They knew about Joshua. A leader must not neglect his family. I want you to think about the implications of that statement. Joshua 24:15, if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Something that Joshua did for his family and for that generation was regarded in high esteem. And when it says that the second generation in Judges chapter 2 that came along that did not know Joshua, did not know the things that God had done, did not know God's law. In other words, they basically did not understand what they were supposed to do. Where was the failure? I want you to consider where the failure was. And I'm not going to answer that question, but I'm going to leave it for you as a study point. Study where the failure occurred between Joshua's generation and the generation that succeeded them. And I think you'll find some outstanding lessons there. Lessons that apply to us today with respect to us raising our families and our children and the next generation. God bless you, and thank you for your participation in class.